Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Tantra's Mantra, where we go behind and beyond the tech news headlines. I'm your host Prakash Sangam, founder and principal at Tantra Analyst. We all know AI is the buzz everywhere nowadays, but today most of that AI runs in the cloud. But as we move forward, it is becoming abundantly clear that cloud-only AI is not going to be sustainable because of energy needs, latency, privacy, confidentiality, and accuracy requirements. So we got to spread that intelligence around. That means pushing it towards the edge, bringing hybrid AI and so on. But that's easier said than done. First of all, the definition of edge itself is very fluid and varies depending on who you ask. No matter how you define it, it is a complex, heterogeneous mix of different kinds of software, hardware, applications, services, and ecosystems. Obviously, running AI on the edge is equally complex and requires a systems approach. Today, we are going to discuss how to achieve that manageability and so on in the edge with an expert. And that expert is Muneeb Minhajuddin of Intel Corporation. His title at the company kind of illustrates how complex edge AI is. He is the VP and GM of Network and Edge, including infra, apps, and AI software. Muneeb, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Prakash, for having me. Pleasure being on the show.
Very well. So, Muneeb, as I mentioned, you've been championing edge AI at Intel. Could you tell us a little bit about your roles and responsibilities at Intel and how long you've been working on the edge?
Sure. My pleasure. My role responsibility, I own all the network and edge software assets at Intel. So, Intel, again, has been, the network and edge business at Intel came together from putting together, our business units across both network, telco, Ethernet, all of that, as well as IOTG, and, combining that together. So there's a lot of software, and that software, as my title says, it covers infrastructure software, application, and AI kind of software. I've been doing this at Intel for about 18 months, but I've been looking at edge even before that, before I joined Intel from my previous company. So I spent 5-6 years looking at edge.
Yeah, so you've been taming edge for some time now.
Oh, yes. I came over from VMware, where I was the GM for edge compute as well as private 5G and MEC there. So
perfect. So let's start with some basics. So how do you define edge? Where does it end?
It's pretty fluid. I think, like you said in the intro, one way to simplify it is anything outside your data center and cloud is an edge. What I mean is that, the vicinity varies from, people have used terms like near edge, far edge, device edge, what have you. But the moment you leave your data center and cloud, it could be a hosted colo, they call the near edge, as people call it. Far edge is something that sits inside of a store or a factory, the extreme end. And there's device edges, which then becomes IoT, blah, 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 right? So it's just like that range varies, but simpler to say anything outside of a cloud and data center is an edge.
That's good enough. And it includes lots of stuff, as you mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Intel has been talking about edge AI platform for some time. But you kind of formally announced Tiber branding and Tiber Edge platform recently during Intel Vision event, right? So what is a Tiber Edge platform and why should industry care about it?
Oh, yeah. Look, I think there's first, let me also kind of say, hey, Intel launched Tiber as our software brand for the company, right? So just like we have a Xeon brand for servers and a Core brand for, our client silicon, we needed to kind of step back and go, oh, we need to have, we aspire to have a strong software presence in the market. But we wanted to create a brand for that. So the company-wide software brand is Tiber, right? So Intel Tiber is a new brand we announced at Vision. Now the Tiber Edge platform, which now is a part of that kind of family of software, there's other software from data center and, other places of the business. In the Edge, the Tiber Edge platform that we launched as part of that is basically, a platform that makes sure that customers can you know, when I say customers, enterprises at the edge, right? So can do day zero, day one, day two for infrastructure, apps, and AI.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, you talked about managing edge is challenging, and bringing AI to edge is even more challenging. So how does Tiber solve it?
Yeah, no, you know, going from that, hey, day zero, day one, day two, like, how do you bring, so when I say day zero, day one, day two, for those three parts, right, mm-hmm. infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
day zero means you have to do secure device onboarding, you know, zero touch provisioning. Like at the edge, you don't have IT skill sets like you have in the data center or cloud.
Yeah.
So the box needs to arrive and, you know, configure itself like your Wi-Fi router in the house or whatever, right? So
mm-hmm.
so infrastructure has a very day zero, day one, day two problem,
mm-hmm.
which is device onboarding, zero touch provisioning, zero trust, and manageability, security.
Mm-hmm.
The second part is applications then that get built in the cloud and data center need to be then deployed, you know, orchestrated and observed at the edge. Again, mm-hmm. no IT resources.
Yeah.
And the third part, the applications then generate data.
Mm-hmm.
That data needs to be analyzed, inferred, and, you know, AI models and built around and inferred around that. So how do you build a model, train it or infer it, and then, you know, deploy it, orchestrate it, and then do, you know, life cycle around that. So day zero, day one, day two of infra, apps, and AI, you know, it's very hard at the edge because there's no IT resources. There's not that amount of security.
Mm-hmm.
There's very heterogeneous, like you called out,
yeah.
type of actual elements. So that is a massive challenge for the industry.
Yeah. So, and it's basically looking to be kind of a life cycle management and helping the IoT folks.
It's the scaled yeah. operation, right? So it's the scaled operations because easy to kind of do a proof of concept with one node.
Correct.
When you come to, you know, telco world, hundreds of thousands of cell sites.
Yeah.
Or when you come to, you know, small coffee shops, again, tens of thousands of coffee shops,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, gas stations or oil and gas rigs and remote. That's, and, you know, the cost there is more of getting somebody out there to troubleshoot, install, than the actual, like, you know, you can't have that many resources everywhere. So
Correct.
How do you actually provide that across the board manageability? At the same time,
yeah.
those things need to be very self-sufficient.
Indeed. So, and in terms of deploying, so does this go on all the devices, or it sits on edge server somewhere, the software platform itself?
Yeah, it's a mm-hmm. it's a combination of, right? So what we see in those typical deployments,
mm-hmm.
I'll give you kind of three situations.
Yeah.
Now, the solution supports all three,
yeah.
right? So one,
okay.
Which we see 50, 60% of the time,
okay.
is people are happy for this to be, you know, to be connected to the cloud. Always,
mm-hmm.
right? No concerns with cloud connectivity. You know, there's always good cloud connectivity. Good examples are like
yeah.
in a retail store, generally, yeah, I can get connectivity. It's not an issue. The second part of that is
mm-hmm.
There is connectivity to the cloud. I'm not averse to having connection to the cloud. But then there's unreliable pockets of connectivity lost.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it could be manufacturing, oil and gas rigs, remote locations. So then there is this periods of, you know, 2 days, 3 days, a week, whatever, discontinuity
mm-hmm.
that the edge still needs to yeah. operate on.
Mm-hmm.
And third is where people don't want to, this
yeah.
federal government, like, you know, all the regulatory requirements that they have an aversion to being cloud at all, which means it's completely air gap. So like those three situations, because this solution can be completely in the cloud, can be in a private instance on-prem, or, you know, completely air gap. But, you know, we see majority of the customer requirements falling in these three buckets, and it can, the solution, the platform supports all three configurations.
I see. Very well. So it's very flexible that way, depending on, you know, what kind of deployment you need. So does it only support Intel hardware, or does it support others? As I mentioned, you know, it's very heterogeneous with different hardware and software components, edge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Like, you know, the precursor, you know, I'm sure you know at Intel, we like our project names
mm.
before coming out with a product name, right? So
yeah.
Like the project names stick for a long time.
Uh-huh.
So we used to call this Tiber Edge platform Project Strata
uh-huh.
because there are layers,
yeah.
right? There is a silicon layer on top of there's an infrastructure software layer, there's an application software layer, and there's an AI layer, right? So that's why it was called Project Strata.
Yeah, right.
I'm trying to make that association. So the reason I'm giving you those layers when you talk about Intel hardware and above, when it comes to the hardware layer, of course, yes, it's, you know, Intel. But as you move in the infra, the app and AI layer, we're able to support more than Intel silicon, right?
Okay.
So for instance, our OpenVINO AI inferencing engine, last year at Innovation, we announced support for that for ARM and RISC, right? Already. So that's part of the platform. So as you go higher up in the software abstraction layer, we actually do support heterogeneity of hardware beyond Intel silicon, because at the software layer, it shouldn't matter. But as you get closer to drivers, firmware, accelerators, yes, it is tied to Intel, you know, silicon, where we would do additional, you know, runtime and acceleration on the Intel silicon, but then providing orchestration, manageability, observability, AI model distribution, AI orchestration, we would support, you know, CPU, GPU, NPU, DPU from anybody.
Oh, I see. Okay. That's good. So, but those, you know, somebody has to write the drivers and other things. You're expecting the other guys to do that?
Not necessarily. No, I think the AI model distribution is all kind of, you know, we can, again, OpenVINO, as I said, that inferencing engine already supports all platforms today. So.
Okay, all of them. Okay. Specifically in terms of AI, so you provide your own models, you know, obviously, you know, different segments require different models, right? More optimized models for them.
Actually, we take pre-trained models from, you know, Anthropic, you know, Hugging Face, all of the above, right? So it's pre-trained models.
Okay.
A lot of the times models are not being trained in at the edge. They're like training is happening largely in the cloud.
Uh-huh.
What's happening at the edge, which is kind of interesting as it evolves, is you're getting inferencing, but you're also getting some amount of retraining and some amount of RAG and data annotation that's happening.
Correct.
So it's not like the fundamental models are still happening in the cloud, but what's happening in reality is agility, dynamic way of adjusting and retraining, some amount of expert annotation of the data, and some injection of RAG is adjusting those models at the edge.
Yeah.
So when you think about it, we're not, you know, we're not supplying our own models per se. We're taking pre-trained models from the cloud.
Yeah.
But then we have the tool sets in the Tiber Edge platform to do retraining, data annotation, and, you know, creating that in order to suit. And I can give actual customer examples, like, you know, where, like, use cases where we're seeing that retraining and all of that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a couple of them during Vision, but go ahead. It'd be great to watch.
Yeah, one thing is, like, you know, windmills was one of the first kind of, you know, things that happened. They were training models for windmill productivity in the cloud for about 12 months, where they were watching the you know, apparently the productivity of windmills is not great. So this company who's a renewables wanted to do, you know, 30% higher productivity. And for 12 months, they've been observing the patterns and trying to model it and apply it and not getting the productivity they wanted. So now we were able to take the Tiber Edge platform, ingest the models directly from the, you know, the inverters and converters. There's no camera here, no vision, right?
Yeah.
We're ingesting time series data from the inverters and generators, as well as from, you know, wind trackers, moisture sensors. So we can do multimodal data ingestion, time series, and then we're able to retrain the model on the fly and then apply that dynamically. The reason the dynamic I'm giving the windmill example is you can't predict the wind conditions or the weather conditions.
Yeah.
So you can't have a fixed model that just applies all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We need a dynamic model which adapts. So now watching the wind you know, directions, the moisture conditions, et cetera, this model is dynamically moving the windmill back and forth, keeping up in order to maintain a 30% productivity KPI. We're able to achieve that in 3 weeks compared to them trying to have trained models from the cloud for 12 months and not achieving it.
Okay. Because, you know, you're specifically applying to the specific use case in that location, in that condition, rather than...
And it's dynamically adapting itself, retraining itself to the changing weather conditions.
Yeah, and nice. So that's a good segue to the next question. So what are the sectors and segments that you're seeing a lot of traction for Tiber?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Across the board, by the way, right? So we're seeing, I gave you the windmill example, renewables, solar panels, oil and gas, warehouse, manufacturing, healthcare. Across the board, right? And very interesting types of, and, they're all solving very interesting problems, right? So pallet detection in warehouse is one of our large customers. Truck arrives with damaged pallets. Once they receive it, they have to underwrite the insurance cost.
Yeah.
As it rolls into the bay, we can automatically say that, and so they don't have to do receivables. That turns around. That's saving that customer a couple hundred million dollars of insurance underwriting. Healthcare, a fabulous example in healthcare, life-saving, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of electronic medical records, like cancer imaging, sits locked into each of the institutes, but can't be pushed to the cloud because of HIPAA, data privacy, patient requirements. They can't be centralized.
Yeah.
So we're able to actually, do, like I just explained the windmill example, we're able to do a inferencing, like retraining model on pockets of data across 71 institutions, then just leave the data where it is, but then federate the learnings across 71 institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have a model that's built, federated across 71 institutions on 50 million records, which was now supplying it to pathologists and oncologists who before each institution only had less than a million records, which not good enough.
Yeah.
But we're able to go that and crack that because we're able to create that model by federating 71 institutions and small pockets of data, which could never be centralized.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I see the edge processing will have a huge impact on healthcare specifically because traditionally it is highly regulated in terms of who has access and so on. So yeah. It would be interesting to see how that develops.
Yeah. So across the spectrum, amazing set of new use cases are starting to emerge because of this.
And any of these are commercial now?
Oh, yeah. The healthcare example that I just explained was, we talked about this at SAP conference recently on stage. Uh-huh. And, we were, along with SAP, because SAP has HANA instances of all these medical records. So we did that with them. And we had that publicly kind of talked about. We have deployments now happening on the retail side. One of our early customers has deployed about 200 edge sites. The windmills are scaling beyond, into pilot phases. So we have about 40-odd POCs and pilots running right now.
Okay. Perfect. And typically, how big are these deployment in terms of end points and so on?
So it's about 3 months since we launched it. So we're still kind of going into the pilot phases. So 100, 200 are good. Now, the opportunity sizes of each one look like, hundreds of thousands of edges eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But we're just getting into the phase where people come, evaluate, and then, go, oh, this is solving my problem. The big attraction is people are able to start their edge AI journey on their existing infrastructure. Like that windmill example, there was no green, brand new hardware.
Yeah.
We were just able to go and capture in the brownfield environment existing data and model it and give them an outcome. So edge AI in a brownfield is what's hot in the market.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. And what is the go-to market strategy here? It's basically through SIs primarily or?
We have two types of go-to-market, right? So one is, like you called out, a lot of these enterprise solutions are system integrator led. So at launch of the platform in earlier this year, we announced partnerships with system integrators like, Accenture, Wipro, Capgemini, and, LTTS. So they're one of the routes to market because they are bringing all these use cases to us and solving that for the enterprises. The second also is we are, enabling a lot of our existing ecosystem. So at launch, we announced that, Tiber Edge is, works with both AWS as well as Microsoft, on the CSP side, OEMs, we demonstrated Lenovo, and then at Mobile World Congress, and then at Hanover Messe with Dell.
Mm-hmm.
And then at Red Hat Summit, we announced our CEO, Pat Gelsinger, was on stage announcing the partnership of Tiber Edge platform with Red Hat. So I would say the, you know, there's an SI route to market, and then there is the, you know, our ecosystem route to market, which is, you know, OEMs, ODMs, OSVs like, you know, SAP, Red Hat of the world, and, you know, as well as, you know, CSPs like, you know, Microsoft and AWS and the rest.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. You mentioned about, cloud providers, hyperscalers, and some of the IoT folks as well, industrial folks, I mean. So, you know, many of these have their own kind of platforms for manageability, right? Provisioning and others. The hyperscalers, AWS has Greengrass, Microsoft has Azure Edge, and so on. So, and then, and if you look at industrial folks like Siemens or GE, for that matter,
yeah,
they have their own platforms and so on. How are all of this coming together?
Yeah.
Who is binding them, right? They're not competing with each other.
Oh no, it's an interesting thing because, and then I kind of I think you listed a good kind of set of folks, right? So one typical thing, and if I take, let me generalize, like, hey, the hyperscalers, the OEMs, the IT world, and the OT world, because you mix them up.
Yeah.
So the IT world is very comfortable going, hey, I think I've done data center and cloud pretty easy. I just need to bring the same kind of template, because you know data center and cloud got cleaned up a little bit. Right?
Yeah.
So like 20, 25 years ago, that was a mess too, right?
Yeah.
Because I remember as a young engineer trying to connect my serial port, my parallel port, my infrared, all kinds of interfaces. Now USB came and went bang, here's done, right? So simplify everything, streamline. Edge is not that, like, it's still got that mess because every industry has its own set of protocols and converters and, like, you know, IOs and interfaces and all of that, right? So big attraction, like big gap for the IT providers on this, I call all the CSPs, like you listed, Microsoft and Amazon and, and Red Hats and VMwares and all of those folks is they don't, like you said in the opening, Edge is super heterogeneous. They don't have the heterogeneity that is needed at the edge. They're looking for a partner where we come and help is today when you go to a, like an outpost and order for like Amazon and order an outpost, that's a 1U, 2U fixed box that Amazon will ship, right? That's, there's no, but that's, you can do homogeneity in a data center or cloud. Same hardware, repeat a million times. At the edge, the retail store is kind of different. Even a retail store in a, you know, a Starbucks is different to a Walmart, to a Home Depot, right? Just in retail. Now, healthcare, hospital is different. Manufacturing, completely different. Oil and gas. So education. So everything requires a variety of hardware flavors and things. And if hyperscalers, everybody needs to maintain hundreds, you know, and thousands of ODM hardware and flexibility, they they can't do what I would call hardware compatibility list of their software and maintain that. So the partnership with a lot of the IT players is basically to help them, you know, expand. So you can go to Azure Arc today, downlist, and all the, you know, Intel-based ODM hardware now shows up at Edge for them. Suddenly we've expanded the catalog beyond just Azure HCI platform, which is a Dell server, to all kinds of ODMs that they can open their Edge services to. In return, we're bootstrapping, we're bringing up our silicon, we're bringing up the OS, we're calling to the Azure cloud services and pulling services from Azure to get that go for them. So each of these kind of technology partnerships is a different kind of mixture of where we're helping Tiber Edge platform is helping them close the gaps they have.
It's like kind of a gel which connects the standard offerings that the cloud providers had and this heterogeneity that you had.
Exactly. So think of it as a middle layer. Southbound has interfaces to all kinds of ODM and OEM, and northbound has interfaces to all clouds and ISVs, OSVs of the world, right?
Yeah, I think the middle layer, I think, is a good definition, right? That basically takes out the complexity from both sides. Okay, that's good to know. So another question that is in the same line. If you look at Intel's history, been basically working with few large-scale players, right? But when you come to Edge, IoT, for that matter, is it's long tail of, you know, lots of thousands and thousands of small players. So are you looking to SIs to do that, to do the outreach and work with them, or
our intent to kind of scale is through both these routes, right?
Okay. So,
internally, we call it the 2P, 3P model. The two-party model is the SIs, is the two-party model is us and the SIs, or, you know, the SIs are leading the enterprise conversation.
Yeah.
The 3P model is where, you know, we are providing elements of the platform to the hyperscalers, the OEMs, the OSVs, the ISVs of the world, and then they take it to market through their own channels, right?
I see, okay.
It's a more embedded model. So we're getting that both.
Okay.
And the big difference is there is a value play and a volume play.
Okay.
The 3P model gives us a massive volume play through all ecosystem, and the 2P model gives a huge value play through the SIs who would go solve that for us. So so I think, again, intentionally putting that two-speed model in place because, you know, again, historically, Intel has, you know, not, and this is why we put the Tiber brand, et cetera. Intel usually has a lot of our software, which are, you know, driving our silicon, and then we just, you know, land it in the market and not commercialize it.
Okay.
As we want to commercialize it, we have to get more thoughtful about these multiple, you know, routes to market. Now, our traditional route to market is our silicon gets embedded into the ecosystem, the 3P in general, and then get sold as appliances and, and as of a bigger solution.
Yeah. But
that's the 3P model where we're supplying, you know, unique software value props, and we still have that pass through our ecosystem.
Yeah.
The 2P model through the SI is a value selling motion where, you know, we'll actually get software value also recognized through the SI. So we're intentionally creating this two-speed model for the first time as we're thinking about also commercializing software. Otherwise, people generally take system level software from us for free. We'll continue to give that system level software for free, but now we're coming up with the ease of operationalization, ease of scaling, ease of manageability, security, which we are able to kind of go, oh, this is value added software. So we can monetize that.
Okay. And that's a good question. So, I mean, as you mentioned, a lot of the software that Intel does is kind of given free, right? Either it's reference software.
Yep.
Or most of the time it's free. So, but that is changing with Tiber Edge, right? You're going to monetize it, and and, you know, coming up with a separate brand makes me think you want to do it even more across the board, right?
Yes.
Wouldn't that confuse some of your customers, even your internal customers? You know, that kind of needs a different mindset and so on. So, how are you managing that?
Yeah, I think it's, again, as I said, it's a traditional route to market has been through those, you know, ODMs, OEMs, CSPs, like we're supplying embedded silicon to that. We haven't traditionally pursued a system integrator software. So I had to create that, you know, two-speed route to market.
Yeah.
And create, by the way, for the first time, we were able to then go or create software SKUs, have a software supply chain established, a software kind of, you know, operations, contracting house, all of that kind of built out.
Yeah.
So, you know, and go create software distribution, SIs, reseller, contracts, all of that put in place, right? So, because it's the back end in the software side is as heavy or actually more heavy than just, you know, saying I want to sell software. We have to build out all the RevOps, the operations, the finance, the billing, all of that. We've done that, and which means, you know, we're quite intent. And as I said, again, we'll continue to support free software, reference software for silicon. That has to happen. But in the edge specifically, we see that there's a gap. Right. So if you kind of go back again, 2-3 decades ago, there was, hey, data center virtualization created kind of the normalization layer in the data center and, you know, client server architecture, what have you.
Yeah.
Then cloud happened about, a decade and a half ago. And then that kind of created that streamlining into the cloud.
Yeah.
That level of kind of streamlining is not there at the edge today because, like you said, it's super heterogeneous. There's no standardization. So there is a gap in the market in the software space.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying, hey, because we've spent about 10 years in the edge already, IoT selling, supplying, you know, silicon into the Siemens, the Rockwell, the Honeywells of the world, et cetera, we have tons of experience managing that, you know, environment. So we're coming and saying that standardization layer in software, operationalization layer in software, doesn't exist. And there's an opportunity for us to kind of step in and close that gap.
Okay.
Like, you know, my past employer, VMware, did for the data center about 2 decades ago. Right? They created that and then monetized it. And the cloud providers came and monetized that layer of IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS for the cloud.
Yeah.
That kind of streamlining of platform is missing at the edge. Like, everybody's trying to move in, but pretty complicated based on the discussion we're having by industry and segment.
Yeah.
And we find ourselves in that unique position to be able to create that normalized platform. So
correct. Yeah, there's a lot of variations and
yeah.
regulations, requirements, and so on. Yeah, it's good. So as I mentioned, AI itself is kind of is becoming hybrid, right? There is cloud component, there is edge, the device as well, and so on. So specifically on AI, how does this going to work? Everybody brings in their own piece as well, right? Like device might have their own AI components, models, cloud, a lot of AI is running the cloud, and the IoT players or the industrial IoT players, they have their own specific models for that market and so on. Yeah. So how does this gel together?
Yeah, yeah, no, it's actually, you know, it's a complex situation. That's where wherever there's complexity, Prakash, is where you can actually monetize and make money.
Correct.
Right? So, so because
opportunity.
Yeah, I think because people want the simplified. Yeah. Uh-huh. So we're doing two things, right? So you probably hear us, you know, already talk about, you know, OPIA, which is like an open standard. So we're driving standardization across different things, right? So because one way to do it, like, you know, again, you don't want to do this in a closed system. You want to do it in an open system.
Yeah.
And the only way you drive standardization, like you called out, across devices, OT players, et cetera, is to drive towards a STOM instead of, you know, interfaces. So we've announced our, you know, standardization efforts across multiple things, right? Mm. So, you know, I think if you think about, you know, OPIA that we announced, which is an open platform for enterprise AI, that is kind of a composable, you know, building blocks for kind of state-of-the-art generative AI systems, including, you know, LLMs, data stores, et cetera, right? Mm. So there has to be some sort of standardization or common set of interfaces, because enterprise data is, you know, pretty unstructured, right?
Yeah. So
documents, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So you have to have some standard interfaces for ingestion, for retrieval, for query, et cetera. So one aspect is to drive standardization. So how do you actually have these composable building blocks and blueprints for RAG and generative AI, and what's the data ingestion, data streamlining, and how do you do that?
Yeah.
That's the standardization.
Uh-huh.
Now our platform already does that at, you know, commercial grade.
Yeah.
Now that works for, you know, ingestion of data. We also announced partnership with, when I was at Hannover Messe, with a Project Margo, which is a left edge project, which again, it defines standardized interfaces for Siemens, Rockwell, Honeywell, Schneider, ABB, all of those folks, because as OT devices, they have their own OT device and system, but they're looking for standard northbound API interfaces, something to write to that'll help them then receive models, receive orchestration and control and logic. So we're also like at different layers of this infra OT data standardization. We're driving standardization through open standards.
Yeah.
While the platform day one has support for this already.
Okay. You know, but it'll still be a lot of effort to make sure this works good, right? I mean, you define something in standards with interfaces, but making sure it works is still a lot of work, I guess.
Oh yeah, this is where, again, this is, by the way, this is where having the SIs in the mix is super important, because this is what they do day in and day out.
Yeah.
They sit with an enterprise, look at all the complex problems, and create the blueprints, deploy them, maintain them, and, you know, do that.
Exactly. So, okay. And in terms of monetizing, what is kind of the model you're looking at?
Oh, yeah.
Is it licensed, or is it, what kind of monetization model do you have in mind?
So we have subscription licenses available today. We're already shipping since we launched it in Q1.
Okay.
We're already recognizing software revenues on the licenses. You can get them. The system integrators are getting them from distributors. We have enabled distributors for this today. So there are subscription-based licenses for TiberEdge platform already available.
Okay. And the subscription is on per device or per instance, or how is that?
Per edge node, as we call it. Right?
Edge node. So, okay. Okay, perfect. And you said you already recognized revenue on this.
Yeah, we launched it in Q1. We had a healthy Q1 run, more than I anticipated. I can't talk about Q2. It's not done yet, but we're ahead of where we plan to be. So.
Okay, perfect. I mean, seeing software revenue is, I think, really significant. So.
Yeah, when people generally, and this is where, like, you know, when we launched it, I was expecting this been 3 months since launch, right?
Yeah.
So in 3 months, you expect 6 to 8 POCs and trials and things like that. Like, that's good signs. Like,
yeah.
If I had 6 to 8, that would still be high-fiving on it.
Yeah.
I have 40 plus. Yeah. So, and then some of those POCs are converting into payments, which is good. Like, when customers actually pay, then you know you're making a difference.
Correct. And especially in IoT, I've been around for so long. Everybody does POCs, right? And tons of POCs. They don't really mean anything. Once the revenue start flowing in, that's when I say, okay, this is real, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So, and what's next for CyberEdge?
We have quarterly releases. We've launched it in Q1. We had a Q2 release ship out. We have a Q3, Q4 release. So we're continuing to kind of build out the roadmap as we get to our early customers. We're getting tons of new requirements and evolving it. Support for, you know, the AI space is not dull, as you know, right? There's new things coming up every day. And they're like, hey, can you interface with this? Can you interface with that? And so the roadmap is quite healthy. We have quarterly launches ready, and they're, you know, all preset launching, expanding into more segments and models and use cases. And so, yeah, it's pretty vibrant, launch and roadmap.
So in terms of cadence, you said you'll have a release every quarter on a regular basis?
We have a quarterly release. The components like OpenVINO and all of those have more like 6-week cadences, but that's, you know, it's all good that the platform end-to-end has a quarterly cadence. So
it was a great discussion, Muneeb. Thank you very much for all the insights. So as we discussed, Edge is a complex market. I'll be closely observing it slowly unfold in the next years, I guess. So I would love to have you back on the show in the near future to discuss how, you know, the Tiber journey has been. And, you know, best of luck with, and thank you again for coming over to Tantra's Mantra.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show.
So folks, that's all we have for now. Hope you found this discussion informative and useful. If so, please hit like and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening this on. I'll be back soon with another episode, putting light on another interesting subject. Bye-bye for now.